Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The truth is out there, and here, who knows? But either way, we're opening up the Bloom Files here on Post Show Recaps, an X-Files first watch / rewatch podcast. Wee wee! You hear those sirens, or is it just a game?
Dead.
No, oh no.
I'm dead.
No.
Fear has gotten me.
Oh no, am I your fear?
No.
Probably like
existential dread is my fear.
It'd probably be like a giant ladybug.
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
You hear that clinking sound, that ASMR of my late night podcasting cocktail?
Yeah, Angela's getting a fix of a cocktail right now. What'd you make?
I made a botanicals vodka drink with the Ketel One Botanicals peach and orange blossom vodka.
We are sponsored by them.
We are not.
Yeah, that's
I happened to find...
I'm owned by them.
Oh boy, we don't drink enough to be owned by
They call me vodka boy.
We'll have this bottle of vodka for 5,000 years because we don't drink.
Does vodka expire?
I don't think so.
I think it's fine.
It's poison.
It just
it's
gets
fine.
Better with age.
We share a beer sometimes.
Much like episodes of The X-Files. These two episodes in particular.
Yes.
Real timelessness to them, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it's so funny because it's like we were watching these, and the first one I forgot is actually a really good episode of The X-Files, and then the second one is actually a very bad episode of The X-Files.
Yeah, it's like a really good, honestly, one of my favorite ones we've seen so far in X-Cops, and then almost like a so bad it's good vibe
and that's
in FPS.
Totally, and when we were talking about like what we were going to watch, I was like, oh, we have to watch First Person Shooter, because it's just like for the David Duchovny tiny Matrix sunglasses alone.
That's one of those moments where you're like, this is The X-Files? This is an episode of The X-Files right now?
This is like a 90s like boy's wet dream, basically.
Yeah, though this, I think, has to be by far one of the most removed X-Files episodes from the concept of the show.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's very similar to like another one that has to do with technology, because it's like the game itself has become alive and that in itself is supernatural, but... I don't know. It's tough to watch.
It's sort of like the oogie boogie of the internet, right? Like, I don't know. We don't know what computers are capable of.
Yeah. So the first episode we're going to talk about is X-Cops.
X-Cops.
Yeah. Which, if you aren't watching with us, is an episode of The X-Files that is done in the style of and mirroring the show Cops.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like from the frame they give, it seems like an episode of Cops.
Yes. And that was the intent, because Cops is also airing on Fox at
course,
this time.
Yeah. To the point where they have the same theme song. They will occasionally, like when they do their act breaks, right, it's the X-Files logo, but it is over the red and blue of police sirens.
And I guess Vince Gilligan was a huge fan of Cops.
Okay.
And he pitched this over and over and over again to Chris Carter. Uh-huh. And then as the show was nearing its end,
right,
season seven.
Remember, season seven is the proverbial, like, well, I guess this is it, folks, so do whatever you want to do.
Yeah, he was like, okay, we'll do it as an experiment.
Yeah, so and it was on like his X-Files bucket list.
Exactly. It was shot on videotape, which is very fun.
Yeah, so to that point, do you know, did they use like similar camera operators as Cops
or
anything?
It was shot on videotape and featured several members of the crew of Cops. I don't know if it all was like Cops crew, but
Cops crew.
You do see them in some of the episode.
Yeah, because it's supposed to be a reality show. I mean, here's the thing. It's odd to say, but I think this episode actually stands up better nowadays than maybe it would have back then, because of the proliferation of the found footage films.
Right? That, and I think also the way that reality television is shot, well, it's not on videotape. It has that videotape quality.
Yeah.
And then things like The Office and things like, which haven't come out yet, right?
I mean,
maybe the British one is out, but nobody knows about it.
Yeah, this, I think, I'm assuming this, though, was probably meant to mimic, besides Cops itself, the Blair Witch Project, which I think it only come out like a couple of years.
The Blair Witch Project or, you know, stuff like, that's on TV, like Cops, you know, other stuff where they're going out and they're...
Yeah, but at least the way it came off now was very much like we've seen this movie before, right? The horror film.
Yes.
That film like, oh, a camera crew, one unsuspecting night happens upon this thing and they're in over their heads.
Yeah, and I guess the other aspect is when you use film, it creates more effective scares because it's challenging to cut. So you have to, like, actually do a scare in the moment.
And it's also not as cinematic, you know, like, because, and it's also because the monster is largely off screen for this. Like, we don't even
find out what it is ever, really.
But yeah, it's wild that we have, like, the whole disclaimer. They bring the theme song with Mulder and Scully in it. It's like a Fox fever dream.
Yeah, it's wild. I think that this episode is super fun as well because while it does follow Mulder and Scully, there's so many other characters in it that are like a hoot.
Like this, we open on this deputy, right? What's his name? Dupler?
Yeah. No.
His name is not Dupler.
Duncan? I want to say Duncan, but I think it's Keith. Keith.
But no, he has a last name. I feel like that.
Wetzel.
Wetzel, that
like a pretzel.
Do you think maybe his family owns the place?
I don't think so, because then he would be a lot richer than the deputy of LA County.
And would his fear be like a pretzel?
No,
he's forbade the family.
This is also another episode that's done in California.
Yeah, they. You know what? They might as well just like go.
They're going to be more
get, like,
too.
Share there.
Truly, they probably already have one.
Yeah, they're like, well, so we're just going to keep you out there at the LA office. You there basically every week.
Yeah, and so I guess that. We open up on Wetzel, who is visiting
AKA Dupler.
Yeah, who is visiting the home of Mrs. Guerrero, who has reported that there's a monster in the neighborhood.
Monster?
Yeah, and he's going there and he's like, we're probably just going to find a dog. This lady's always calling shit in, like she's the worst. And so he follows whatever creature is there around the corner, but starts running back, screaming to the crew.
Yeah, being like, oh, we want to go back in the car.
And yeah, so he's like, run, run, run.
And they hop back in the car and the car gets attacked and flipped.
Yeah, it's overturned by an unseen force.
What do you think about the idea to keep it off screen the entire time, especially considering what it represents? I mean, it's essentially a Boggart, is it not?
Yeah, it's like a fear monster that takes shape of your fears. So you only see it when you are thinking of what scares you.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it's fine to keep it off screen because otherwise then you're forced to create everybody's individual fear.
And considering that, yes. Technology has advanced during this time, but
we'd
I feel
have to
like,
do a werewolf. Like we'd have to do it's too much.
And if the whole entire concept of that is it's created out of your imagination,
yes.
It's much better to reside in the viewer's imagination,
yeah, 100%.
Than to actually conceptualize something. So it's a rarity for the X-Files, but I really like it.
Yeah,
it's like in Aguamala, right? Like the up until we saw that bad CGI water tentacle, it was a cool idea.
Yeah, because you were unsure what was happening. That's very much the Blair Witch Project. That's we don't know what this is. And we're not seeing it. We're just seeing people's fear, which is scary.
Well, Mr. Pretzel, though, when, you know, he eventually gets found out and rescued, he does not tell anyone what he saw, right? Because I'm sure he's even in denial. He just says it's those damn gangbangers.
Yeah. Not like super PC to say stuff like that anymore.
Well,
but
listen, we are far from out of the water of the PC-ness over the course of this episode.
Yeah. Rough stuff coming up, but, I find it all very fun. You know, it's like, yes, there are some flaws that wouldn't fly in today's society, but I think that there's a...
It's a sign of the times.
Yes, and it's a pretty good summary of the times, I would say.
Yeah, just throwing that word around like, oh, it's probably those, you know, those naughty gangbangers. They're the ones that flip your car.
Yeah, truly. Good stuff.
This is when they chance upon Mulder and Scully, right, who are investigating at the time, because I think they said in the past 60 days there have been a bunch of monster sightings in the area.
Yeah, monster sightings that, like, the deputy is still like, I don't know what these are.
And Mulder outright says, oh, no, you do. It's a werewolf.
Yeah, because that's why he's here, because he thinks it's a werewolf. So Mulder has come to investigate what he thinks is a werewolf, and he just happens onto the... sheriff's department or whatever department Cops is following this week.
Right. And I love the meta-ness of Wetzel says, with all due respect, what the F are you talking about? And they actually believe him. Like, yeah. It's a TV show.
Yeah. And later on, he's like, Scully says something to the effect of, oh, we can't be on TV. He just said shit. And like, and then they bleep her too.
Yeah. No, he says, I think it's Scully notices the cameras and she's like, we can't be on TV. And Mulder's like, no, it's not live.
He just said bleep. And it bleeps him too.
Basically, yeah, this is actually a really interesting episode for Scully.
Yeah. Like, she's over it.
She's over it, but I think she's more animatedly over it than
yeah,
she has
it's
been
very roll your eyes. It's very bad blood. It's very like,
yeah, but it's
comical.
It's a little, yeah, like you said, it's a little more OTT than like what we're usually getting, which is like, Mulder, I don't want to do this. It's like, Mulder, what the hell are you doing?
Well, yeah, and I think that also stems from the fact that like she has no interest in reality television, whereas yeah. Mulder's like a little bit like loving the
he's
attention.
A little bit of a showman, yeah. Yeah. A little bit of a showboat. Plus, he figures that this camera crew was a prime opportunity to be like, I can show a werewolf in a real national television.
That's true. So
they go visit the lady.
Oh yeah, they're going to go to her house and they're going to bring a sketch artist with them.
Yeah,
Randy,
Ricky. Did you clock the fun holographic poster that turns from the picture of Jesus into the Last Supper?
Yes, I did, but I also didn't. I was like, that seems right.
That does seem right, but it also is very 90s, right?
Yeah.
Between like training cards and other and collectibles.
Everything was holographic.
Everything was that holographic two-sided thing. But the plot thickens as
yeah, so Ricky does a sketch of whatever Mrs. Guerrero saw.
Yeah.
And it happens to just be Freddy Krueger.
Right. And so they're just like, okay, this is useless. This is stupid. We're following a kook
who
thinks she's being haunted by Freddy Krueger.
Yeah. The other thing that happens is as Ricky's leaving, he's like afraid of being alone in this dangerous neighborhood.
Yep.
And then basically we cut to very soon after that he's going to be dead too.
Right. In the meantime, Scully says like, oh yeah, I let Wetzel go, because initially Mulder had said, oh, you got bit by a vampire. Look at these bites on your arm. But Scully said that actually the bites were just welts, which will make a lot of sense in just a little bit.
Yes.
We'll find out exactly what's been chasing Mr. Pretzel here.
Yeah. So Mr. Pretzel is like, didn't see what Mrs. Guerrero saw. He saw something else. And we'll find that out in a little bit.
But poor Ricky.
Yeah, Ricky
did. I forget. Did they say what killed Ricky?
No, the issue is they a couple witnessed the incident but didn't see Ricky's attacker, and that's the Steve and Eddie.
Edie.
And Scully basically like finds the fingernail on Ricky, but I don't think it's shown like what actually tracks him down.
It's not as explicit as some of the other,
because it's not, I think it's mostly to show you that he was afraid and then he died.
Yeah. Just interesting that he had to, I think, had a more general fear, but I guess still got him at the end.
Yeah.
We gotta talk about Steve and Edie for a second, because if you want the textbook example of how a lot of gay characters were personified in the late 90s and early 2000s, look at these two.
And I'm not sure how much of it they're putting on and how much of it is who they are, because I do think that when you look up, this is me talking about a butthole here, but Curtis C, who plays Edie, is listed as Edie as Curtis C. So like, I wonder if he like was a drag queen or somebody who was part of the LGBT community and like was that way.
Yeah.
It's really hard to tell because
it's very much the Birdcage, right?
Yes.
Much like the more conservative, for lack of a better,
I do know that
man,
this
and, like,
is like,
and the wildly flamboyant man.
Yeah. And both of them are very flamboyant, and that's not to say that that's a bad thing at all, and people exist that are this flamboyant,
right.
But
they're
pointing to it and they're going, ha ha ha, that's funny that they're that way.
Yeah,
which is challenging in this
and
day
also
and age.
The initial joke, right, was like, oh, Steve and Edie, the couple, and you're like, oh wait, it's two men,
it's two gay men, huh?
Which, yeah, like you said, like, I don't think they're going for necessarily bad stereotypes,
they're going for the laugh, you know. It's like they're using them as gay flamboyant men as something funny to be laughed at and to say, okay, well, they're the silly ones. He's so dramatic. He's so over
the
top.
Yeah, they're very dramatic. Like the,
and it's like,
like singing to the camera.
I don't think there would be any problem with these two existing in this universe if they were taken seriously.
And that's the thing. I think they definitely stand out because they are more OTT and slapsticky than a lot of these other characters.
Yeah, because they're being told to do that. But anyway, We could go on and on about the LGBTQ plus representation in the 90s. We shan't.
We shan't. There's documentaries about that. Yeah. They point a finger towards Shantara, the street worker.
Yeah, because they identify the long pink fingernail that belongs to her.
Shantara herself is a little bit of a
piece of
character.
Work.
As I think Steve says, she's on the pipe, so we don't associate.
Yeah, and I think that this is another bad representation of sex workers. Like, just going to point that out. There's a lot going on here that's not great. You know, that she's in a, like, that they don't associate with her because she's a prostitute.
And also an addict.
And also an addict. And she claims that her pimp, Ricky, is the one who attacked her.
No, Chuko.
Chuko, right, attacked Ricky. And
because basically what she says is...
Yes.
He's been, like, chasing...
She's afraid of him.
Weeks, I'm afraid he's going to wring my neck like a chicken.
Yeah, that she keeps saying that. She keeps saying that. But the, yeah, I mean, this is another representation that, like, I don't want to get too far into, but the representation of prostitution and sex work in general in the 90s is, like, even the word prostitute is, like, not great. But
yeah, it is interesting that they also do the fun thing, though, of blurring her face out.
Yes, like the I do like that. The
is that everyone else signed an NDA, I suppose.
Except for Shantara.
Except for her.
Yeah, I guess so. Which is fun. That's, like, a nice little... Because she's not an important character to see her face.
Yeah,
like,
all we know is she has pink hair.
And I don't want to say not important, but she's very, like, short for this earth.
Yeah, because they decide, okay, let's follow this Chuko trail, right? We'll go to this crack den.
Maybe Chuko is the one that's been attacking everybody because he's, you know, he's clearly a bad egg.
Mulder's like, I don't think so. Something's going on here, but still, the cops burst into this crack den.
So apparently during this scene, they actually used real SWAT people. In the raid of the crack house.
I mean, it looked intense and realistic.
So. Yeah. So they actually use actual SWAT policemen, like, because they did a crossover with cops, so they had them on hand, I guess.
Wow.
But
wow. Imagine having SWAT people on hand.
I do.
Every day.
Every day. Every goddamn day.
So,
pounded by that paparazzi.
Nothing doing, except they do find someone, like, badly wounded.
Well,
right?
So they go into the crack house. It is a true and utter scene.
Yeah.
There's somebody, like, puking, there's a baby, there's, like, just a whole situation, and they go into the bathroom, and they find somebody dead on the ground, and it is what's his name?
Was it Chuko?
It's Chuko, and they said, that...
I don't really recognize them with, like, the poultry lighting.
No, they say it.
Okay.
They definitely say it, and, they... say he's been dead for a couple days, so it couldn't have been him that killed Ricky.
And so when they go outside, dead end here, they find that apparently, according to Mr. Pretzel, the monster was here. He tried to shoot at it. He tried to chase it, but it's gone. But
it's too late for Shantara.
Yeah, sure. She is dead. And much like she foresaw, her neck was wrung like a chicken.
Yeah, it was like totally twisted around. And then so Mulder is like asking Wetzel what he saw. He's like, what did you see? What did you see? Because there's nothing here now. Like, there's nothing here.
Can you please freaking describe to me what you've seen now twice?
And he says that he saw, he's embarrassed to say it, but the Wasp Man, a monster his older brother told him about when he was a kid.
Which is a man who has bee stingers for teeth.
I guess. I didn't listen to that part. I just imagined a giant bee man.
Yeah, which would explain...
It's like the fly.
Which would explain the welts that he has on his...
Clearly, yeah, he's being stung as part of this.
I feel like having bee stingers for teeth is not very conducive to living as a human.
I mean, it's a monster.
Yeah, I know. But liquid diet for wasps.
It's clearly not a realistic monster.
He drinks nectar.
Anyway, everyone's like laughing at him because they're like, this is weird. And then another officer finds bullets that physically impacted something. So they're first doubting Wetzel even saw anything. They're like, he was shooting at nothing. But then they go onto the street and they find bullets that clearly hit something. So he saw something.
Yeah. And so this is when Mulder starts to come up with this grand unifying theory, right? That the creature... all throughout tonight has preyed on someone who has been afraid.
Yeah, and it basically is taking those worst fears and realizing them.
And so there still is one piece, though, of vulnerable people that they need to go back and reconnect, which are Steve and Edie. Now, this is a weird one, right? Because, like,
we sort of get an ending with them.
Right. So they basically say that that Mulder says, like, he thinks Steve and Edie might be the next target.
Right,
because
the next victim.
They were in the vicinity of Ricky's attack. And so they go to the house and they're in the middle of an argument. So I guess, like, the argument they're having is about their relationship.
Right. Because I think they say, like, oh, he doesn't make love to me anymore.
Yeah. It's like a totally, like, ridiculous soap opera fight.
Yeah.
And so his fear is being separated from Steve. That's Edie's fear.
Oh, so that was the purpose of that scene, was like, we got to get him to reconcile so the monster doesn't come?
Yeah, basically, like, because Mulder's like, what are you afraid of? And he's like, I'm afraid he's going to leave me. And basically, like, ignored them because they weren't showing mortal fear. Like, the fears that they had were, like, not tangible. Like, they're like existential fears. Like, so,
okay.
So he basically said it ignored them because there was no way for it to use that fear to kill them.
I guess so. I feel like they could have used something more tangible.
That's just what Mulder says. I don't know if that's like.
It was a weird thing, because if you don't have the implication, it's like, oh, they walk in on a couple arguing and they help settle the argument and that's it.
Yeah. And then, like, Mulder also is telling Scully to go do an autopsy on Shantara's body, because he also has this idea that, like, maybe it's a contagion.
Yeah,
he says, like, oh, maybe this is, like, gonna travel from person to person.
Right. And so when Scully's doing an autopsy, there's this, like, corner
this
with her
idiot.
It's like, oh, is this might be the hantavirus. And Scully's like, it's not the hantavirus.
Well, yeah, so she's talking to her, and, like, I guess that they called in this assistant, the coroner's assistant, super late at night.
Right, it's like 3 a.m.
And Scully says, because it might be a virus, so we need to make sure that it's not. And so that really freaks her out. She starts going into a panic about the hantavirus, which, after doing some research, is an RNA virus I've never heard of.
Oh, you've never heard of hantavirus? I've heard of hantavirus before. I mean, listen.
It's all about, like, rodent urine, feces, like, very black plaguey.
Yeah, no, hantavirus usually comes, if they're, like, in not well-kept areas.
Yes.
It is interesting, though, that this does sort of draw attention to the fact that one of the rare times where Scully isn't, like, wearing a mask or, like...
Well, yeah, so the lady asks her, like, why aren't you wearing a mask if we're worried about contagion? And Scully's just like, I don't know, like, I don't think I am.
So over
She's just like, I'm not actually worried about contagion, and this body is dead. Like,
yeah, this body's neck is broken.
Yeah, this person clearly died with their neck broken.
But the coroner's...
Yeah, like 5 seconds later, this woman breaks out into all of the symptoms of the hantavirus at once.
She sneezes and it's blood.
Yeah, and then she dies.
Yeah, and so Mulder realizes that, oh, she was dying of specifically hantavirus, and it's the fear that kills you.
Mm-hmm. And so he's worried about Wetzel.
Yes, and so we get this, like, landmark final scene, right? Where where are they? So they're going to
Back to the crack house.
Okay, I was gonna say, it looked like a condemned house, but they went back to, like, this crack house, which I guess got cleared out.
Yeah, I guess so. And Wetzel's upstairs by himself in a room.
It's really well done here, where you have first it's Wetzel and his camera crew, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, suddenly they hear a loud banging, and the door closes and locks, and then the camera goes down, like, very Blair Witch, well done to build the terror.
And this is when you also see the camera people too, which is fun. Yeah.
And then Mulder and Scully eventually make their way into the house, and they hear, like, okay, Wetzel's upstairs, and he's, like, boarded up in a room.
Like, gunfire, you hear that. You hear, like, screaming. But then all of a sudden, the sun rises.
Yeah, Mulder tells him not to be afraid, and, like, you see his arms have been cut up, and then all of a sudden, the night is over.
Yeah, and I think that, like, this is the part that, like, bugs us the most about the episode, is that there is no, like, realization of what actually the creature is.
Yeah,
this happens a lot in the X-Files.
There's no, like, concrete thing of this is what it does and this is how we solved the case. It was
solve the case.
Well, we survived the night.
Yeah, very hocus pocus.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a really interesting idea. I feel bad for this community because it seems like this creature is just going to keep feeding
every
on
full
them.
Moon. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it was the full moon.
It was the full moon, and that's why
that was the whole werewolf.
Yes, that's why Mulder thought it was a werewolf. Yeah. Anyway, Scully ends the episode by just sort of, like, making fun of Mulder that he's not going to be on TV to expose, you know, his paranormal phenomena, like, the explanations of the world.
Famous for that.
Yeah. And that's it.
I mean, I thought it was, again, really
it's a fun
well
episode.
It's a really fun episode. I like that it takes place over the course of one night. Mm-hmm. It's very much like Triangle in that it's not, like, real time exactly, but it feels very much like a short time frame.
As yeah, to other and it's very one note, episodes. Like, one and done. Like, you don't really need to see too much to understand what's going on.
I mean, we literally don't see the monsters.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I find this episode to be a fun one.
Yeah, I really enjoy this. I really like the stylistic choice. I think it works really well for, like, considering that this is sort of, like, a horror-adjacent show,
yeah.
I would say. I think it works really well for the horror elements. Again, there's a reason why found footage is such a big genre for horror.
Yeah.
Is because you can do things like this. And so I think it was really well done. Yeah, maybe some of the characterizations were stereotypical and not...
And challenging in this day and age.
But I think that they did a good job of building up a very unique villain and doing it in a style that really built the tension towards the very end.
Totally. And I think that it's one of the funner episodes that we've seen in a while. But that being said...
The fun has just begun. We're going to take a quick break. Go go get some bees or some, I don't know...
Honey,
I guess suppose so, with my bee teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to chew into first-person shooter when we come back. Let's go, 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 go!
Bang, 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 bang!
Ooh, boo, poof, poof. Ooh. Oh, let's talk about the episode.
What was that last bit?
That was me and my lingerie.
Oh, no.
And sword. Yeah, we're talking about first-person shooter. We finally reached it. Something you have hyped to me since day dot.
Which I'm sorry that I did hype it, because it's not a great episode.
No, it's very fun, though.
Like, it is
very
fun.
Much like, it's very sign of the times, as is vocalized in this episode, right? You know, video games were becoming a big thing. And not only that, but violence in video games was becoming a big...
Topic,
especially
in the zeitgeist.
In the wake of the Columbine shooting, right? There was this whole argument of, are video games too violent? Are we instilling violence within our children? And so it makes sense. It doesn't make sense, but it makes sense if you're doing an episode, then I guess this would sort of be something in the zeitgeist to discuss.
Yeah, and so the episode is written by William Gibson and Tom Maddox, and they had also written Kill Switch.
Oh, interesting.
So
you... If you had told me that, I would not believe you, because I imagine that it's like, okay, these guys did this, now we're going to do this. I did not realize they said, let's go back to this.
I mean, I think it's supposed to be, not even go back to it, but like the successor to it, like very like in line with the vibe, because they thought that they were motivated to write it because the episode had success, like Kill Switch had success at the time, which we didn't love either, but it's fine. Anyway. Video games. Virtual reality.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that it's sort of a combination video game virtual reality. Like, it takes place within an artificial construct, but we see from this opening scene that these guys are getting decked out in their laser...
It's like glorified laser tag, yeah.
Yes, because they're wearing, you know, the vest, and they have these laser guns.
And they have these
visors.
Cool, sweet visors.
Yeah, so they can go into this, what seems just like a giant warehouse.
Yeah, it's a giant warehouse that's been outfitted to be the environment for this. And so
they go through level one of the game, right, which is supposed to be, first you gun down like an entire line of people on motorcycles.
Right.
And then you run through a hallway with a bunch of people shooting at you.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see here what's going to be revealed is like the phony realistic effects of this. You know, one of the guys gets shot and like a blood pack explodes, but it's like yellow green blood.
Yeah, it's like a paint pack, basically.
It's like paintball.
And what we find out later is that these paint things explode, but a volt of 12 volts goes through you as well that basically keeps you down for the rest of the game.
We see this guy sort of like writhing on the ground like he's been shocked, but it's supposed to be like, oh, you're really dead because you can't get up.
Yeah, so he's actually just being electrocuted, which doesn't seem safe, but...
I understand why in the beginning of this episode they want to set up, like, what the world is, but I still do feel like they spend an inordinate amount of time in this cold open.
Yeah, I think also, here's the thing, they spent a lot of time on special effects in this, a lot of money.
Apparently, Emmy winning.
Great, they spent a lot of money, it almost went over budget.
Yeah, I mean, that would make sense. Yeah, apparently, according to Spencer, was nominated for 3 Emmys and won 2 for sound mixing and visual effects.
Okay,
and lost
I'll take
sound
that.
Editing.
Yeah, I mean, what was sound edited well? And hear the gunshots?
Oh man, those were crisp gunshots.
Yeah, and I mean, here's the issue with this. This is like, basically, when they were writing the episode, William Gibson and Tom Maddox are writing this, and they are basically writing this in a way that is just about video games. And Chris Carter was like, okay, but it needs to be an X-File. So they had to do a lot of rewrites.
Oh, interesting. So they're just writing like a generic video game thing. So that goes back to my earlier comment of like, this doesn't feel like an X-Files episode.
Yeah, and they also wrote it to prominently feature the lone gunman. So it's like kind of like they're shoehorned in there because he liked them.
Interesting. Yeah, well, because they're going to be the ones that are sort of
They're the reason that Mulder and Scully are there.
Yeah, but they're also the expo dump, right? Of like, oh yeah, we love video games. We're investors. We help out with these programming nerds.
Totally.
But we should mention before all that happens, this one guy, I guess his name is Retro.
Yeah.
He ends up meeting...
Wait, Repo? Retro?
I think it's Retro.
I don't remember.
Repo.
Repo Man?
Because I'm going to take your stuff. So there's this...
Hey.
He meets our mysterious villainous vixen.
Yeah, basically he's decided that he's going to go to the next level without his comrades, and he goes down into this, like, basement.
Yeah, and he sees Maitreya.
Maitreya. And she basically, like, kills him with a gun.
Yeah, she says, this is my game, and she kills him. And so this is why Mulder and Scully are brought in, is because they have to investigate this murder.
Yeah, so basically they're confused as to what happened here. That's the whole episode, is figuring out how a game could kill somebody.
And so they really build up that this is, you know, the most prestigious, secretive video game company in the world.
Yes.
You have to do an ID scan, a retina scan.
Yeah, and I think that even Mulder says at one point, like, you can't even get into the Pentagon with all that, or like, this is harder to get into than the Pentagon. And I think also one of the things to note about this is that while they were filming this, they had like a lot of challenges with budgets and like special effects and all of that. And to keep costs down, the production crew initially borrowed virtual game layouts from video game companies. Uh-huh. But they couldn't copy those existing designs. So they had to create edits of their own, and ended up being really costly. So as you can see, I mean, I would say that this is very much so like GoldenEye.
Yeah,
like
it very much was. Well, that's interesting. Yeah. Cause I would say one of my main negatives on the episode is, you know, we go through two levels. I would have loved to see more, but if that's a budgetary thing.
Yeah. How can you see more? Yeah.
You know, I want it to be more like Nick Arcade.
Yeah, that would have been fun.
Remember that show where you were on a green screen, but like playing Sonic?
Very basic remembrance of that show. Wasn't my scene.
So Mulder and Scully walk in on the lone gunman, right? This is when they get their whole thing of like, mm-hmm. hey, it's the late 90s. Video games are the new American gold rush.
Yeah, and I mean, he's not wrong. There was a real big boom at this time.
Gaming is huge nowadays.
Yeah.
We should also mention here that they're acting like super hip as well, and that this company is called First Person Shooter, aka FPS.
Right.
Which is, God, that's terrible.
It's not good.
It's not good. It's the name of, like, what would you name a fake video company? It would be called, like, First Person Shooter.
But you know what? The guy who owns it sucks. So
it just doesn't make sense for a video game company to be
so specific.
It's named to be a genre of video game. It'd be like, okay, what's your movie studio called? Oh, it's called comedy.
It's like, yeah, exactly. Like, it's Blizzard Video Games is like one of the biggest ones out there.
Yeah.
They're not called Diablo.
Yeah, or they're not called like online role playing game.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, very on the nose. They're like, oh, just call it like first person shooter or something.
Yeah. Some other casting notes before we really dive in here.
Take me into these nerds.
Well, the nerds aren't really that important, but they did need to do a ton of stunt work casting for this. So,
considering what Maitreya does.
So Maitreya is actually, so that's another interesting one. Maitreya, they did a ton of casting work on. They looked into every possible avenue, including strippers, adult video entertainment ladies.
Oh my God.
Exotic dancers.
Ooh, who are the people doing that research?
I don't know, but they settled on a American comedian. Her name is Krista Allen. She was on Days of Our Lives. Mm-hmm. Baywatch Hawaii and erotic TV series, you know, whatever.
You know, the real
but she was in a bunch of stuff. She was in like the, you know, like a Charm, Smallville, mm-hmm. Married with Children, like a ton of TV shows. And she was in Anger Management with Adam Sandler and George Clooney's directorial debut in Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
Oh, wow.
So she's been in a lot of stuff. She's not
been in any video games.
I don't think so. But they cast her and they were like, oh, she's too wholesome. But they bumped her up a little bit with, I guess, Jejeune, you know, to make
her... She's supposed to look like a femme fatale, I suppose.
Yeah, she's supposed to be Lara Croft Tomb Raider meets porn star.
Yeah, or like Kate Beckinsale from Underworld, right? Like the kick-ass woman in black leather.
Yeah, her and Lara Croft meets a porn star is what she's supposed to be. So anyway...
I mean, literally, we'll find out that it's based
off. She did a great job. I mean, looking at her like picture, yeah. I wouldn't guess that she was this character. So, but she also was somebody who they had to hire a professional gymnast to do scenes for. Well, so yeah, there was a gymnast that portrayed her.
She does the flips over and over again.
Yes. And then 14 stuntmen were hired to ride Kawasaki motorcycles and fire gas-powered machine guns.
That's wild. Yeah.
So yeah, lots went into this.
So the whole reason why Mulder and Scully are brought in is because these guys were, I think, like playtesting the game that was supposed to launch Friday. Obviously, they don't want to do it if there's blood on their hands. So they have to check out whatever caused this accident.
Right. So the guy's like, we need to do it stat. So I guess...
Yeah, there's this little, like, goatee, you know, douche that's like, we gotta get this out now. We've been working on this for years.
Well, because his investors are ready to ship the game.
Yeah.
And he'll, like, lose everything if it doesn't ship, basically.
Yeah. So who cares who's murdered?
Yeah. He doesn't care. But anyway, they're going to do an autopsy, right?
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of weird lines here where Mulder says, if I were you guys, I'd check my pants for cake.
I didn't get that either.
I think, like, cake your pants is another term for pooping your pants, but it's just so, A, an odd euphemism, and B, to phrase it that way is so strange. There's also, I think Scully mentions, right, like, oh, you do this for buku points.
Yeah, it's so stupid.
I don't think I've ever heard the term buku actually used.
I don't think Scully says that. I think one of the lone gunmen say that.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
But they're also, this is the part where right in the beginning, they're shown a video from the game where they see Maitreya.
Yes, they find Maitreya, and they basically say, like, and Mulder's like, oh, I think that's actually the murder suspect. And they're like, what are you talking about? She's not real.
Yeah, and so, first of all, they don't know how she got there. They don't know what she is, but she's clearly in a video game. But Mulder prints it out, and he gives it to the detective, and he says, putting out an APB for this.
Yeah, meanwhile, they're going to bring in this wonderkind of...
Daryl Musashi.
Daryl Musashi, apparently... As you said while we were watching, like, Twitch before Twitch,
yes.
Essentially. The boy wonder of virtual mayhem, I think, is what Langley
He's
says.
He's a computer hacker.
But also, like, a video game savant.
Yeah, like a video game savant, like, whatever. He enters the building just, like, with a vibe.
Like. Yeah, like, as a basic celebrity. And basically, Musashi's going to get to the same point Retro Guy did. And Maitreya cuts off his hands with a sword.
Yeah, she has a totally different look, and she basically takes a Japanese sword and kills him.
And we actually see, like, him with cut-off hands, which is wild.
Or a medieval sword, I should say.
Yeah.
She's dressed as a Japanese swordsman.
Yeah, and so she... I mean, listen, he doesn't have to live without hands for very long, because he doesn't live for very long.
Yeah, and then she just kills him.
There's a really also fun lampshading moment where Scully's like, all right, I'll go do an autopsy. Like, you don't even have to tell me. I know what my role in these episodes are.
Yeah, and this is also where later, I think she's doing the autopsy, and they wheel him in.
Yeah.
Like, and he's like, so she's doing the autopsy on the first guy, and they wheel, and she's basically, like, doing the autopsy, and she's like, supposed, like, entry wound, gunshot, and then she's like, redo it. She's like, I don't know what killed this guy.
And it's really funny because she really is at the end of her rope of there is no feasible explanation beyond all realms of reality as to why this is happening. So she has to revise everything she says in the autopsy and say, I really don't know what happened here.
Exactly. And so while she's doing that, this guy's wheeled in, basically. Mulder's going to get a call, though, because the sheriff's department has found a woman similar to the printout, and she's being picked up.
And it's ready for all the cops to be bro-y horn dogs at her.
I hated this scene so much. This was, like, the worst.
So bad.
This is, like, the worst representation of male gaze I've seen in a long
time.
They
literally do the thing where, like, the guy bites down on his knuckle to be like, oh, she's so hot!
Yeah, and so when Mulder's entering the interrogation room, he, like, turns back to the guys and does that, and they all go, yeah!
But, like, nobody does that in real life.
Oh, not anymore. Maybe they did back then.
No, nobody ever did that in human existence. No one has ever actually done that. Like, these guys were one step away from their eyes popping out of their heads and wolf whistling.
I think this is the, I don't want to say the main issue I have with first person shooter, but one of the big ones is that it's meant to be this big conversation about females existing in a testosterone driven male environment and what they do to cope and how they do to get ahead and all of these things that are really just sort of tacked on there when, like, that could be the episode.
Yep.
In a really cool way, that could be the episode. We could learn more about Phoebe. We can learn more about, like, what makes Scully similar to Phoebe. But no, it's all about a stripper named Jade Blue Afterglow and how big her tits are.
Yeah, JBA.
JBA.
Jade Blue Afterglow sounds like, I don't know, the name of an aftershave or something.
Yeah, it doesn't sound good. It's not, I mean, it's not a great stripper name, but Jade is, like, the one of the most common names you would think for, like, a fake name that you would use in, like, a environment like that.
What year did Basic Instinct come out? 1992? Because they make a reference here, right?
They do.
They have JBA, like, crossing her legs a la Sharon Stone to...
Yes.
presumably flash us if this wasn't, you know, rated a certain way.
Right. And so she does that. She's very sexual here. She's just, like, sitting there.
I got Hyatt to go get a body scan done.
I don't know why she took her jacket off when she came in, but she took her jacket off when she came in and she picks it up on her way out. So, like, was she just trying to show off some skin?
Maybe she was trying to be like Dick Van Dyke, trying to hang up your jacket. But yeah, she... Jacketless reveals that
she was,
like,
paid by a medical imaging facility to scan her body.
Yeah, which we'll find out later was essentially, like, done for Phoebe.
Yeah, and that Phoebe did this because she was, like, trying to create a character that could be everything that she wanted to be.
So meanwhile, the nerds are testing on the lone gunman, and they get sucked into the game.
Yeah, so the lone gunmen are trapped inside FPS. With somebody trying to kill them.
Wait, so is the game called FPS?
Yes, the game is first-person shooter.
But the company is also called first-person shooter.
I think the issue is that it's not just a video game company. It's a virtual reality company. So, like, the game is going to ship out its first-person shooter, but that's the whole thing. There's nothing more than that.
I don't know. I don't know how you'll be able to sell that, considering that nobody has the amount of room that this company has.
Totally. So maybe you can play it on a screen, but you can also come to this facility and do it.
Yeah, that's like, rent out your place.
That's probably the case.
Have birthday parties.
That's
there.
What those people were doing there. Retro.
You think that's what they were doing?
Mm-hmm.
I thought they were more so like,
no, they were paying.
Part of the company.
No, I think they were paying.
So Mulder
to get their yayas out.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing, too, right? Mulder and Scully sort of have that conversation of video games causes violence.
Yes.
No, it's just a way to, like, get out repressed emotions.
Yeah.
So Mulder is going to go into the game, and Jesus Christ.
You lost your shit when you saw that.
I mean, it's the sunglasses, right?
Yeah.
It's the Neo-esque small
round. Yeah, and
round
at first I didn't remember that they were sunglasses. I thought he was just wearing the visor like everyone else.
Nope.
But there's, like, really no reason for him to be wearing sunglasses.
Especially indoors.
Yeah.
Especially when his vision should not be that limited.
Yeah, like, unless there's some reason that he needs to protect his eyes, but nope, don't see that.
So Mulder is able to...
He's also sleeveless, by the way.
Oh, yes, he does have... He has
his guns out.
Yeah, he has his guns out with the full gear. Like, David Duchovny wanted to go full Rambo.
Yeah.
We know this.
Yes.
So he's able to do that. He's able to save the lone gunman, make his way to Maitreya.
Who is now dressed as a ninja.
And suddenly, Maitreya transports them away, and suddenly, like, everything fades, right? They're within the Mike TV section of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah.
Everything's white again. And Mulder and Maitreya are gone.
Yeah, like, they're not there. They find the gun, and they're nowhere to be found.
So, we're now at this. So, this is level two, right?
This is level two.
And it's the Wild West.
Yeah. Level two is the Wild West. So, they go into the game. We're basically transported into the game as if we're watching from the outside.
Yeah, and so Mulder is trying to face down with Maitreya, who does a series of redonkulous flips.
Yeah, she does some crazy flips. She's also dressed in the most ridiculous, yeah, like,
and they
horny
do the,
cowgirl way.
And they do such the stupid effect, right, where he, like, shoots at her, and they just speed up the footage to make it
so
seem
she
like
multiplies,
she's going faster.
And yeah, she multiplies, too.
Oh, they do? Oh, that's terrible. I forgot about that one, right, where there's five of her.
Yeah, I didn't love that either.
So this is where Scully finds out the true culprit, the creator of Maitreya, is, as you mentioned, Phoebe, a.k.a. the girl programmer.
Yeah. I like her. She's great.
Is she someone famous?
She looks like, what's her face from The Bee in Apartment 23?
Oh, Kristen Ritter?
She looks like Kristen Ritter. I don't think she, like, obviously isn't Kristen
Let's
Ritter,
see.
But I don't know.
Oh, Constance Zimmer. That's lady from Unreal, right?
Yeah. That's so funny. I didn't even realize. She's so young here. But yeah, I think she does a great job here but I wish that they had given her more.
I think this is a really, like you said, great thematic note, right? She says she chokes on a haze of rampant testosterone, and, like, this was a way for her to kind of channel her rage, and it was only meant to be for her.
Yeah, let's see her succeed, but instead we see douchey guy at the end, like, taking her work, yeah, basically.
Or just see more of her at the end, you know? Like, and make this more of a moment between her and Scully, because like, Scully basically just has a line where she says, oh, no, I get it.
She's same. But moving on. But let's go save our boys.
Yeah, they don't talk about it at all. Meanwhile, Mulder's vitals are wiggy, as
Frodo so the thing about these suits are that they can track your vitals, which seems highly unlikely in this day and age, but this is pre-iWatch, so, you know, maybe.
So Scully now has to go in and save Mulder.
Yeah. So
I don't know why they think her. I guess she had probably the best marksman out of all of them.
Well, so I think this is not explained at all, but I think what Phoebe tells Scully is that Maitreya is all about girl power and that in order she's going after all of these guys and killing them, and that's like her MO. So she thinks if Scully goes into the game, maybe like she'll be okay because she's a woman.
That's interesting.
That's like what I think they're trying to get at.
Obviously you want to go with the boom boom pew pew, but if it was a way for her to come in and like not reason with Maitreya but maybe focus on that more,
just have some sort of conflict with her where Maitreya like stands down because it's a woman, like but she shoots at her.
Nothing happens. And while it's a fun excuse for Gillian Anderson to like go a little commando, basically now she transforms into a tank, right, and starts firing at them,
which is one of the ways they use CGI in this. A great way.
So basically up on the, you know, the level, they're debating basically whether or not they should kill the game.
Right, because there's one way to stop it. They can't stop the game. That's what's happening, because if they stop the game, they're worried that Mulder and Scully won't be there. But they're basically like, they can kill the game and it'll erase the entire program. And so they hope that Mulder and Scully will be brought back.
Yeah, so they're saying, no, like my investments, look at all this hard work.
Yeah, and so this guy, Ivan, goatee guy, is like, no, don't do it, Phoebe. Don't do it, Phoebe. And the fact that Phoebe even has a moment of hesitation here is like bonkers to me.
Oh, no, you know what? We'll let two people
again, this would have been
a
great point for her to stand up and girl power it, but she doesn't.
Yeah.
I mean, she does. She gives the kill command.
It's wild to me that they're like, you know what? Should we kill two FBI agents to let our game survive?
And Byers and all of them are like, no, we need it. We need it. They're going to die. And so he gets the kill command and he destroys Maitreya along with the game. And they're super worried that Mulder and Scully are dead because they go out onto the game floor and
they're not there. But I guess they made their way back into this like pseudo airlock.
The holding cell.
Yeah, and Mulder just quips, that's entertainment.
Yeah.
And then we get an Armageddon-esque moment of them, right? They're all walking in slow-mo.
And Mulder's like narrating.
Yeah, saying like, wow, do we really have an unquenchable bloodlust? And that's the reason why we find solace in video games.
Yeah, and it's like so stupid. But we pan back to the control room and that guy's sitting there like crying, basically. And the computers activate and we see Maitreya. She has Scully's face now.
So what's the implication of this? That the game still got released?
I have no idea.
What's the sequel to this?
I always thought of it as like, I don't know why she has Scully's face all of a sudden.
I guess it was just like maybe she like glommed onto the last strong female she saw.
Maybe. And I guess Ivan sees Maitreya as a way that his game is still alive. Like that something still exists that he can ship out, I guess. That's my only thought.
What it very much ekes to me of is, you know, the end, ...
Totally. That's what I'm saying. Like, there is no explanation. Nobody knows. Nobody said anything. I didn't do any research to the fact that, like, what happens? No idea.
What a ridiculous episode of television.
A lot of guns, too. Not a big fan of guns.
It's just truly ridiculous in so many ways. And I love it as a time capsule of them thinking, like, this is what video games and virtual reality look like in the near future.
Yeah. And I think also, I mean, it's fun because it is in a way very nostalgic for us, because it's like just take a nice little stab at, you know, video games is like kind of a hoot in this day and age. Yeah. But I can't imagine. I mean, I remember watching this and like whatever in it, but I cannot imagine watching this at the time and being anything other than bored. But that's me.
Or being like, look at this this great social commentary. Video games are the devil's plaything.
There is a funny quote that I saw in the Wikipedia article, which is his name is Cyrenaic Lamar from IO9, which is like a...
Oh, yeah.
Called Maitreya, quote, one of the 10 most ridiculous X-Files monsters. And I think she's probably up there at the top five for me.
Wow.
She's pretty bad. I mean, she's like, talk about somebody like being created for a purpose and not being used for that purpose.
Quite literally, yes.
Yeah, like just rough stuff. But
Is she your spook for that episode?
Yeah, I think so. Because I think the fact that like, I would say she's not really spooky, but she's definitely like the one that causes the most angst in me.
I might have to go with Horn Dog Cops because I think they just represent just everything sucky about the episode.
Fist biting. Yeah.
Awooga.
Yeah.
What about anything from X-Cops? Does it like by default the off-screen monster?
No, I'm gonna say the fingernail.
The singular fingernail.
Every second week in a row I do an inanimate object.
Just keep, you know, eventually the Beauty and the Beast themselves, yeah, and come to life. I'm gonna count the monster. That's,
yeah, probably more likely than monster.
All right, so we are moving on from two very weird, very different episodes to season 7, episode 15, Enemy.
You just got that before we hopped on here, by the way. Yeah. By the way, everyone.
Exactly. In season 7, episode 17, all things. You literally squeed when I read that.
All Things is one of my favorite episodes of all time, written by the one and only Gillian Anderson.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so what can you tell me about these two episodes?
Okay, so Enemy is an arc episode.
Okay.
Basically, there's a boy with cancer. He's not surviving. And so to do with the cigarette smoking man and cancer as it relates to aliens.
Okay.
And then All Things, all lowercase, is about
that's like E.E. Cummings style.
Yeah. It's all about fate and coincidence and a former flame of Scully's.
Ooh, okay. Well, it seems like it's been a while, but I feel like we finally get like a Scully-centric.
Oh, it is all Scully. Mulder's barely in it, but it's Scully for sure.
All right.
And it is delightful.
I'm excited to get into it. We'll see how much more squeeing takes place next week as we cover episode 15 and 17 of season 7. If you have any thoughts, of course, BloomFiles@PostShowRecaps.com, XFiles@PostShowRecaps.com, tweet at us at Ange Pelagi, at A Mike Bloom Type, and at Post Show Recaps. And check out all the other great stuff going on Post Show Recaps as well. Lots of new stuff starting up as long as, you know, new seasons of old shows are starting up. And Post Show Recaps has you covered, as well as the X-Files. We'll be back next week covering those two episodes, Enemy and All Things. Special thanks to Corey B. for his fantastic theme song. We'll talk to you all next week. Until then, case closed.